There's something special about Yom Kippur. And then there are 10 days of tshuva, including Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, between these two essential dimensions. The tshuva is one phase of divine service, but both for Yom Kippur and for Rosh Hashanah, there's an essential dimension which transcends tshuva. Let's take that. And he says, first our divine service must center on the essential aspect of Rosh Hashanah. Afterwards comes the aspect associated with tshuva. Thus there are 10 days of tshuva, Yom Kippur. The aspect of tshuva of Rosh Hashanah comes after the essential dimension of Rosh Hashanah. Now let's take tshuva for a second. Why can we say there's a statement about tshuva, tshuva brings atonement. And even another deeper statement, tshuva transforms sin into merit. Does it work? That, you know, forgiveness and atonement. How do most of us think about it? You get out with a clean slate. The transfer to merit is definitely like not a typical concept. And even the clean slate is not so pleasant to understand. So let's take explains the tshuva transcends all the mitzvahs. Thus can atone for all the blemishes and serving the mitzvahs. For it reaches a deeper point in the soul that is reached by the other mitzvahs. Here's the example which is given in the Torah and other sources. A river dries out. A wellspring then dries up. What do you do? You dig deeper in the source of the water. There was water coming from there. The immediate source stopped flowing. So dig deeper. You'll tap into the main source. The mitzvahs speak about the conscious level which we connect to God. Basically, we have powers of thought and powers of feeling. But there is an inner, but more fundamental level of the soul which is always in connection. What is tshuva? Digging deeper to uncover that fundamental connection. Or to put it, to say that in a different word. Human being wants to connect to God. How does he do so? He do what he wants. Now, you do what he wants. Torah and mitzvah. And that connects our conscious, not only connects the conscious powers with him. What happens if he didn't do what he wanted? So there is no conscious connection. You've got to tap into a level which was never set yet. And that gives us a whole new conception of the term tshuva. The Rebbe speaks about this. It's a more preliminary sifra. It's in Chayek Beis, volume 2 of the Kutta Sifra, volume 5 in the English translation. What happens? We say, in English, we translate tshuva as repentance. Then, whatever it has in the whole sifra, he says, is repentance, prayer, and charity, all these are American terms, English terms. The Hebrew terms are much deeper. We'll deal with the idea of tshuva here. What does repentance mean? I'll turn over a new leaf. What does tshuva mean?
Return.
What are you returning to? Your fundamental godly core. Each person's soul, the essence of his being, is a godly core which is essentially good. We don't believe in original sin. The whole concept, on the contrary, man is fundamentally good. He can occasionally stray. Tshuva is to come back to who he really is. Not to turn back the path of goodness, to return to your own inner core. And when a person does that, he's at one with God. That's what his fundamental core is. So, that's the idea of tshuva having a deeper level in the soul than all the other mitzvahs. All the other mitzvahs relate to that dimension of the soul where a person is separate. He's got a conscious mind, he has his own feelings, and he has to make, he has to bond his heart and his mind to God through doing what God says, through the mitzvahs. Tshuva taps into a level of the soul where there is no separation, where the person's fundamental will is at one with God's will. That's tshuva. And as mentioned above, since the essential aspect of Rosh Hashanah comes before the service of tshuva, it follows that this aspect of Rosh Hashanah transcends even tshuva. We just now said that tshuva is touching the aspect and soul which is above your conscious self, the aspect of soul which is one with God. Now we're saying there's a level even above that. What are we talking about? So, the Rebbe continues. The essential aspect, what is the essential aspect of Rosh Hashanah? The coronation of God as King. Thus our sages quote, God is asking, say before me, verses reflecting my kingship, to make me king over you. What is the service of Rosh Hashanah, the fundamental service? Crowning God as king. We spoke about this a little bit when we were doing chapter 41. Let's go into it for a step deeper. What's the difference between the laws of a monarchy and the laws of democracy? In other words, or a simple thing. A king says, there's a story in the Bible, King Solomon told a particular person, Shimei, his teacher, his name was Shimei ben Gera, he had rebelled against King David, but he'd asked David's forgiveness. Still, King Solomon David told King Solomon, that's the way, you're a wise man, don't let this person live out his life comfortably. Solomon didn't know what to do. He can't kill the guy. He was pardoned by King David. So he said a simple thing. Go to your city. Never leave your city. And the guy stayed in the city for a certain amount of time. I forget exactly how long. And then, for a particular reason, that's a parable. I'll go out to the city for infrastructure. He went out. He was executed. Solomon called him and executed him as a rebel against the king. That's equivalent to crossing a red light. How many of us haven't taken a red light in our lives? Or more? Why is the person who violates the king's command liable for his life? And we take a red light. Where's what happens? Does he pay a fine? What's the core of the issue here? Seriously, it's strange that the king represents the very essence of the people. You give your life for king and for country. That's something. It's, as it were, a suit, the national identity, which is reflected in the king, is, as it were, a super self, a higher identity than your own personal identity. In other words, I'm my own self, but over and above that idea that I'm my own self, I'm a subject of the kingdom. And that's really more essential. This is my individual identity, and this is a general identity above my particular eye. It's a little bit of a hard concept, but it explains a lot of things. Like, you see, so many people over the course of history who have given up their lives for their country. I wouldn't do that. I mean, really. You know, why wouldn't they do that? Because I don't identify so deeply. Like America very much. It gave me a lot of good things. That really gives me a lot of good things. But in neither sense would I feel that, oh, this country. People, throughout the course of history, people did that. Why? Because they were tuned in to this essential dimension of self. I said it's like branding. It's hard for us to realize we don't have it anymore. When we, I don't know, when the shaktas are, when we see them wept. And it was all the time I had FSM. Why do you weep? We lost a marshal, we lost an example, an analogy for God's kingship. When you had an absolute monarch, the Tsar was an absolute monarch, he gave orders and they had to be kept. Once that disappeared, we in contemporary society lost the awareness, this awareness of kingship. But it's core in a relationship to God. So now we can start to understand these three levels. The first, we have acceptance of God as king. Because until we accept God as king, the observance of mitzvahs is not relevant. I mean, we say this in Shema every day. We say this, the more explains this. Shema is Kabbalah's Ol Malchus Shemayim. Shema is the acceptance of the yoke of God's kingship. Lo Yom Shemoa is the acceptance of the yoke of God's mitzvahs. First, we should accept God's kingship, and then we accept his mitzvah. Because without accepting his kingship, why am I doing his mitzvahs? They say, accept my kingship, afterwards accept my decrees. Therefore, tshuva, which serves to atone for failure in fulfilling the king's decrees, is relevant only after the kingship is accepted. Our acceptance of God as king relates to his essence. The observance of his mitzvahs relates to God's will as coming to revelation. All the mitzvahs are expressions of his will. Tshuva, which atones for forgetfulness, relates to a higher level of godliness, but also one which shares a connection to his will. For a level which totally transcends God's will, must also transcend the service repents for the transgressions of that will. In other words, what are we asking for in tshuva? Forgiveness. What does that show? That we're still talking about it's a deeper level, but it's a level that still has to do with God's will as it comes into revelation. It relates still to the real levels of godliness. Acceptance of God's king, God as king, relates to God's essence, which transcends all revelation. Again, the king is willing to sacrifice his life for his people, the people sacrifice their lives for their king. There's this essential bond. Now here we start to see the uniqueness in the souls of Jewish people, that they can affect God's very essence and evoke in him a desire to be king. To be able to affect God's essence, however, it is necessary to express the inner beta that lies the whole heart of the center of every Jewish soul. This is expressed in our request of God, reign over the entire world in your glory. Set a mouthful there. Let's start first idea. It's explained that Rosh Hashanah creation goes back to its initial point. On the surface, the world still runs. But God's desire for the world is to return to his very essence. Originally, he had a desire for the world that was expressed from himself. Afterwards, he says, you must arouse in me desire to be king. You must arouse in me desire to maintain the world. Who does that? Now think about that for a second. How can you do that? Can you be a king over ants, animals, sheep? Over whom can you be king? Humans. If you have a whole court of animals, you're not a king. A king is recognized, becomes a king when people, somewhat on his level, because they respect him as king, make him king, but somewhat on his level, make themselves his subjects. What does that say about our relationship to God? That we can do that for him. That's an awesome statement. We can motivate God to be king. In other words, there's a point of equality, of commonality, like that between subjects and a king that exists between us and him. But he's infinite and unbound and without everything else? Yes, he is. And even so, we have the potential, we share that commonality to bring out his kingship. That's the point. That's the first point. That's the uniqueness of soul of Jewish people. They can affect God's essence and invoke in him a desire to be king. But how do you do that? How do you make somebody king? People would bow in the coronation of the king. People would bow down in utter homage. In Torah, there's the idea of spreading. We do this Rosh Hashanah. This is like, and you'll see it. We do it Rosh Hashanah. We spread ourselves out flat on the ground. machinery? Yeah. And you've done Rosh Hashanah. Yeah. What does it mean you spread yourself out flat on the ground? That's good. When I stand, I'm erect. I've got, the person who's standing up sees I moves as he wants to, he can control. When he sits, he's lowered himself. But he's still upright. His head is still above his heart. When you bow, you submit your head to an authority. But even though you bow, your head is lowered, it's still higher than most of your body. What is this idea, flat out on the ground? I'm no longer my own man. Not my mind, not my heart, my hands, my heart, my feet, everything, it's all one, all in utters, I'm giving them all over to you. That frustration, totally out of the ground, that's the core of accepting a king. And only that type of commitment awakens God's desire for kingship. Why? What do I want God to do when he becomes king? To move from his realm into ours. Instead of being where he is in his transcendence, to make over, to undergo a transition that he cares about us, invests himself in us. In order to evoke that transition on his part, what do we need to do? A similar transition, to give over ourselves entirely, that we're not concerned with our own being at all, we're all given over to you. When we give over ourselves entirely to him, he gives over himself to us and becomes king. That's what he says here. To affect God's essence, however, is necessary to express the inner bitul that lies at the center of every Jewish soul. This is expressed in our request of God, reign over the entire world in your glory. By that complete fealty and bitul to God, we bring him out as king. Now that he takes this, and he brings us out in the idea, the name Rosh Hashanah. What does Rosh Hashanah mean? You mean the new year? The head of the year. Not the new year, not the beginning of the year, the head. So that's a significant analogy. That's not a mistake or just a usage. It's the head of the year. As we say here, names for the Torah are chosen because they describe the true nature of things to which they refer, expressing their very life force. This also applies to Rosh Hashanah, which is the head of the year. The head has several unique aspects. First of all, the head is the most elevated and sophisticated of the body's lists. I mean, we see, we speak, we smell, all our higher functions, even the sensory functions, some of more so intellectual functions in the brain. More than that, the head includes the life energy for all the lives of the body within it. They've mapped the brain. And like 50 years ago, 60 years ago, No, it wasn't 60 years ago. The statement would have been hard to understand in science, wouldn't it? Head includes the whole body. Then in the 50s, they mapped the brain. There are parts of the brain connected to every particular organ of the body. In other words, the head has in it the whole body in microcosm. And as a result of that, the head directs the function of all the organs. So we see parallels to these three qualities with regard to Rosh Hashanah. Divine service which characterizes Rosh Hashanah, the crowning of God as king, affects God's essence, a love which is above the divine service carried out throughout the entire year. That's the highest level. Rosh Hashanah is also a day of tshuva. Tshuva based on the mitzvahs that stands above them. Indeed, it can be said to include them. That's the head includes the entire body and microcosm. Tshuva includes all the mitzvahs. And then the good resolutions made in Rosh Hashanah influence one's observance of the mitzvahs in the year to come, affecting them as the head directs the limbs of the body. And with this is the third dimension, the head controls our function. Rosh Hashanah controls the whole year. That's one of the things people will always tell you, be careful of your conduct in Rosh Hashanah. Because it's the head of the whole year. It's the year in microcosm.
It's kind of like if you're dealing with the brain, like in brain surgery, you have to be like extra careful because like one little thing could like totally ruin something.
And the change on Rosh Hashanah, a Rosh Hashanah of Torah, Tefillah, and Tilling in a full sense brings about a really good year because you've hit the matter in its very core. Then, taking that further, the resolutions that you take on Rosh Hashanah, that brings it down, brings out the connection. So, in regard to Rosh Hashanah, it says the mitzvah day involves the shofar. Based on the above explanation, follows the three factors mentioned above: incarnation of God, tshuva, and observance of mitzvahs, reflect the sound of the shofar. And it's true in regard to all matters of genius. This concept is also alluded to in Nigla, but it will be mentioned to Torah law. So, they're just about to explain it. He's now going to show us how the sound of the shofar has in it all three dimensions, the mitzvah, tshuva, and kingship. And it was true with Rambam writes, well, the sound of the shofar Rosh Hashanah is a decree from the Torah, it also contains an allusion. It is as if the shofar is saying, awake, turn to God and tshuva. The question arises, why does the Rambam state this concept in Hilchos Tshuva rather than Hilchos Shofar? Although the Rambam is speaking about tshuva, if you explain the motive of your principle from mitzvah of shofar, seemingly it would be more appropriate to include Hilchos Shofar. The side of power, Ram includes the Hilchos Mikvos, the explanation of the motivating principle for the merging of mikvah. These are the decrees in the Torah. Nevertheless, there's an allusion to the concept to purify one's soul from its impurities and base character traits by merging in the borders of pure knowledge. This concept that related to the divine service of tshuva is stated in Hilchos Mikvos, and not Hilchos Tshuva. It describes the rationale for immersion in mikvah. Why then is the rationale for shofar not explaining for shofar? The Rambam states also provoke another question. The Talmud states, say before the verses reflected my kingship, make me king of you, and what means by the shofar? The shofar is thus the medium which brings about the coronation of God. So why does the Rambam mention this solution? The answer to these questions requires you to understand the three elements involved in sounding the shofar. The mitzvah of sounding the shofar, that's one. Is expressed in the particular laws which apply to it. The Rambam considers this as one of the 613 mitzvahs and mentions the law of the Hilchos Shofar. In other words, the first and practical dimension of Shofar you got to blow it right. You can know all the inner mystical intents of Shofar, understand all the divine service. You can't get the notes right, you blew it. You got to blow it. Miss it. Then there's the concept of tshuva. This is alluded to by the sound of the shofar. Tshuva reflects a love above the observance of mitzvahs. The point of this quality, Rambam mentions this concept in Hilchos Tshuva, and not Hilchos Shofar. Hilchos Shofar contains the scriptural laws of sound and shofar. It does not mention tshuva. This dimension transcends the mitzvahs and is only alluded to by the shofar. This is like the word used by Rambam. Both sound and shofar Mashon is a mitzvah, it is a decree from the Torah. In other words, though it's fundamentally a mitzvah, it also contains an allusion refers to tshuva, which transcends the mitzvah. In other words, we now have step two. So tshuva, as we have shofar as mitzvah and shofar as tshuva. Then there's the aspect of sound in the shofar which brings about God's coronation. This aspect transcends the mitzvah of sounding the shofar entirely and cannot be communicated even by an illusion. For an illusion reflects a thrust towards revelation, while the coronation of God, by contrast, brings forth the mitzvah, the bitul, that lies the essence of the soul, which is above revelation. That point of coronation of God as king cannot come out even through tshuva. And now here we start to get to the core point here. Based on the above, we can appreciate the connection between the sound of the shofar and the verse "He chooses his heritage for us," which is recited before the sound of the shofar. And was in the prayer, the hymn, the Matzeach, Psalm 47, which was recited before the blowing of the shofar, we have the verse, "He chooses his heritage for us." What does he chooses? In an ultimate sense, free choice involves choosing without any regard to any factor or consideration other than the initiative one chooses. When a person's choice is motivated by a reason, as if that reason forced them to choose, this cannot be considered free choice. Here's the meaning. If I know that he's smart, and therefore I choose him to work on this job which requires intellectual and proficiency, I didn't choose him. I made a correct decision. It's not choice. If I need protein, I eat meat. That isn't because I chose meat. It's because that's what I need. When a person acts intellectually, that's not choice. On the contrary, for a thinker, which is a more powerful coercion, a gun in his back or what he knows is right? No question. What you know is right. That compels you in a complete and utter way. So what does it mean, God's free choice? And he adds another point. How can God's choosing his heritage, our heritage for us, be associated with Simon Schofield? His choice is dependent on Simon Schofield. How could it be considered free? These questions can be answered by pointing out kind of two aspects of the shofar associated with performance of mitzvahs and divine service of tshuva do not relate to God's destiny. Instead, they draw down merely the revealed aspects of Godness, arousal from above that's dependent on arousal from below. Bitul of the soul's essence, which is expressed by the coronation of God, the family and the shofar, relates to God's essence, tapping that level of the soul on which the Jews are one with God. And at that level, God chooses the Jews freely. The sound of the shofar is not what causes him to choose. What is the sound of the shofar? the sound of the shofar reveals that we are totally out of the picture. We put our own identity at the side. At that point, that arouses God to choose for his own identity on the side, as it will, and then he chooses us. Our choice of him evokes his choice of us. Not because he has to, because he doesn't have to at all. He chooses to. What do we mean by choice? He invests his essence. And when God invests his essence knows no bounds, and therefore there's no limitation. And as such, because he's investing his essence, then in the countenance of the kingdom of his life, any desire emanating from God's hidden dimension will surely be associated with life and goodness. This will be revealed in the material plane, for God's essence is connected to our materiality. And so it is that every Jew is described for the goodness of each year, for the opening of pamphlets. But when God responds to our blowing the shofar in an essential manner, naturally all the positive dimensions of God is also drawn afterwards, and we have a year of goodness and blessing, for the ultimate blessing coming this year.